Hello, everybody, and welcome to Dragged Into Turbo Lasers, a miniature wargaming podcast from the people behind the blog Between the Bolter and Me. And today's episode is a special two-part episode since we recently got back from Under the Dice Fest in Massachusetts, where there was the largest Mordheim tournament in the United States, among other cool gaming events. But while there, we interviewed a whole host of different people and wanted to showcase that in this episode. This is from the first day, and shortly after, we'll release an episode with the second. So with that, sit back and enjoy. Everybody, we're here at the New England Mordheim Open 2024. I'm pretty excited to be back here for a second year celebrating Mordheim here in Chicopee, Massachusetts. I'm here, Greg Wire, with my brother Eric Wire.
Hey, everybody.
We got in last night and hung out a little bit at the Hive Scum studio, and it was pretty rad.
No, yeah, it was great. Nice to see everybody again and see the studio space they've been talking about.
It's a pretty big space, and already it's filled with stuff.
No, it sure is, and I know talking to Gage and some of them, they were really excited for it to finally be cleared out of all the preparation stuff for this festival, which I guess Nemo is obviously happening today, the Mordheim event, but overall, I think what it's called Under the Dice Fest, so it's celebrating just all of Steve's Under the Dice Fest stuff, and I think there are going to be some other events, right, tomorrow and so forth.
Yeah, there's a Magic the Gathering Commander tournament, there's a board game, a Marvel board game called Crisis Protocol that people are going to be playing, and a lot of other open gaming table stuff. I guess also beyond the Mordheim stuff today, there are also going to be a bunch of bands playing Chained to the Bottom of the Ocean.
That should be great. And Trey's playing under the name Basilisk, right?
Yeah, Trey, who last year made a soundtrack for the first New England Mordheim Open. He's here to put down some sick atmospherics. So that should be excellent.
No, yeah, I'm excited to see it. And, yeah, it's just amazing to see how many people have come out. Like, I feel it seems much bigger than even last year, which is impressive.
And lots of tables, all of them look very impressive. Not a playmat in sight.
Yeah. No, it's true. And, yeah, the first game is already underway. People are excitedly rolling dice, maybe trying to remember the rules to Mordheim again.
Yeah, I'm sure there are some veterans of Mordheim here, but also quite a few that haven't played it. Either have never played it, or only played it a little bit back in the day, or perhaps even just played it for the first time at the Mordheim event here last year.
Yeah, no, I certainly understand that. Yeah, because I feel the first time we ever played was at kind of an event of that style for Mordheim 2019, was the first time we actually played it. And I feel now the times we play it are at events like this.
Yeah.
But I guess with that said, we aren't actually playing this year. Like, we wanted to just come and spectate, take some photos, and, yeah, interview some people, which hopefully will
document the event.
And to be honest, I haven't built a new Mordheim warband, so I feel it was time to put the vampire count to rest for a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's appropriate. Maybe next year we can have some cool new warbands to demonstrate.
Yeah, no, I feel there was some rumors of maybe trying to put together a small Chaos Dwarf Warband. Maybe that will come to fruition.
We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. Hopefully. Hopefully. But yeah, so excited to talk to some other people, and yeah, should be a good time.
All right, everybody. We're back at the New England Mordheim event. I'm here with Jonathan and Alex. Nice to have you all here.
Yeah, thank you so
much.
Thanks
for having us, guys.
We're excited.
Alex and Jonathan were here at the New England Mordheim event last year. I think, Alex, you had been playing last year, but you're not this year. What do you have to say about that?
I got to play last year, and it was awesome. It was a lot of fun. But as John and I scrambled out of the house this morning, I didn't take any miniatures with me. And
was that intentional, though?
It was a little bit. I mean, I wanted to play. I mean, you can't steer me away from wanting to play Mordheim. That's really hard to do. But now that I'm here, I'm like kind of happy that I don't have my miniatures with me, so I can just soak it in and enjoy it.
Yeah, it's nice to not have quite that much chaos, and I feel there'll be time to play other stuff throughout the weekend or get involved in things.
Yeah, last year I was like scrambling around and I was like sweaty running from table to table, so it's a little nicer to be a little bit more leisurely taking an approach to it this year.
Well, so some of our listeners probably remember Alex from AV Hobbies. You're publishing all sorts of games. So what are you up to now? And Jonathan, you're helping Alex with some of YouTube stuff and also some RPG stuff.
Yeah, actually, Alex and I decided that we wanted to try some new side projects. And so we opened up a YouTube channel called Legends of the Tabletop. And we're going to play some RPGs, some card games, anything we can get our hands on.
Nice.
And I'm going to try to force Alex to DM some D&D for us as well.
Excellent.
Yeah.
It's been really cool so far. It's kind of a new thing for us. But yeah, we're playing some games. We played, this upcoming week, actually, we have a video coming out where we play Dead by Lead, which is one of the games I wrote.
Yeah.
We play that on the channel. I ran a game for like a group of our friends, and it's been really fun. And we're just kind of rotating through, as John said, and trying different games. And it's been interesting. But yeah, the long-term goal is to maybe do like an extended Dungeons & Dragons campaign on there in addition to the games. People have regular content to check in and watch, maybe even live stream eventually. And
what setting? Like a pre-made setting, Forgotten Realms, Planescape, or your own thing?
I'm such a madman that I'm going to write my own thing from scratch.
That's the best.
We'll see how many plot holes they can poke in my project. But
yeah, it's a part of the thing, right?
I'm a mad scientist. I always, always creative. So we're going to give that a shot, but...
No, well, that's fun. That sounds... Have you done a lot of DMing in the past, and this is... Or is it a newer thing?
No, I've DM'd a couple times. Actually, for John, we had a campaign going for, like, almost a full year.
Yeah,
Like, right after the pandemic got manageable, so to speak. And that was great. And a couple of the people that played in that group are going to play in this new group. And, I grew up DMing a lot because nobody else wanted to DM.
I mean, it's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work. It can also be really rewarding, and I'm okay with doing it. So if nobody else wants to do it and you have someone that's okay with doing it, that's usually a good starting point. So I was like de facto DM growing up, and then...
And I think for role-playing like that, if you want to bring in new people and get people excited about it, it's pretty important to have a good GM that can roll with different things and try to encourage and help newer people get into the mindset and get excited about it. Because it can be, a little difficult if you're new to role playing to really get into a character and get involved in that stuff. I mean, I know it's something I have struggled with and the role-playing stuff that I've done, which hasn't been too extensive.
We've just laughed our asses off about things. And did I really role-play, per se? I don't know.
I mean, if you are playing yourself, character.
That's fair.
Yeah, and just stay true to you.
Yeah.
We have a lot of fun when we play. We try to be serious. We try to do voices and all that. A lot of times that makes it funnier.
I can understand that.
Yeah, there's a lot of laughs that are had at that table.
Absolutely.
But one thing we've been trying to do as we've been setting up this campaign, we've done like a lot of the back end work already in like a session zero sort of thing, people getting their characters together.
Yeah, yeah.
Is really trying to be transparent about expectations on the table and what people want from the campaign, and you know, talking about if anyone has like phobias, you know, that's something that we're trying to approach going into this, because to your point, like
you want people to feel comfortable and like you're only
going to have as much fun as everybody is comfortable on the table. You know, those two things have the same trajectory, in my opinion. So we've been trying to be really good about that from the get-go. And so far, I mean, it seemed to have like done justice. Like we have some very clearly defined parameters for how we're going to run this game.
That's good. And I feel it's good to even just talk about it and put it out there that it's you're trying to have a good time. And the more everyone can be on the same page, the better.
Yeah. Also, the notion of asking the players what they would like to get out of the session and their characters probably just helps you as the DM craft a story, because ideally, I mean, Jonathan, you and I were talking about this before recording, how ideally it's a collaborative storytelling thing, like the DM provides the start of the narrative and the problem for them to solve, but ideally you want everybody working together to help tell an interesting story such that it's not just the DM doing the work.
Yeah, I mean, if you have a DM that does 90% of your work for you, one, your players lose interest, right? If I'm on a table and I'm never participating, I'm on my phone, I'm daydreaming, and then your experience lessens, you're going to get less out of it.
Yeah.
When you have a DM that's like, hey, Jonathan, tell me how your character feels. And then you're like, well, how does my character feel?
Yeah, yeah, and that's good.
Give me your backstory, and I'm going to work that in. Something you were excited about before you ever came to the table, my characters looking for their long lost brother, and you get tidbits of maybe being able to find that person, you're buying in now. And so having an excellent DM like the one that I just grabbed, that's going to happen. And so like we're super excited to be able to take this journey and to share it with other people.
Yeah,
that's
great.
It's great to have it yourself, but to be able to say, hey, listen, this is something I love and I enjoy. Maybe you enjoy it too, and people buy in. They're like, listen,
to share that passion. Yeah, and
absolutely.
And that's been a huge component of it too with our approach to this thing. Is we're not approaching it from like a narcissistic standpoint of like, oh, we think we're the greatest D&D players ever, this is Critical Role. We're not doing that at all. We're doing it like, again, circling back around, we've had experiences where we can remember our first time playing on a RPG table, and like you're uncomfortable and you know it's a little awkward, and this thing is supposed to be about having fun, and for us it's our happy place. So if we can record that and show us being silly and going through some of those things together, and then sharing that and putting that out into the world, like hopefully other people will feel better about that.
Well, and I feel it also probably is something to will encourage other people to see, like, you know what, we could do these things.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not as esoteric and difficult as maybe it seems. Like, because, you know, it's a big hobby, so many source books and things. Like, it, from the outside, it can maybe feel like, well, do I need to get all this stuff? What do I need? And, like, no, you could, like, you can get lots of stuff because it's fun for world building and such, but you don't need it.
Like, a big thing for John and I, whenever we play, is we do a lot of ridiculous voices every time John and I play. And some people don't like that. You know, that's not their cup of tea. And I would never tell anyone how to approach a game. You know, it's like you do it the way you want to do it.
Yeah.
And you make it as rewarding as possible for you and have fun while you're doing it, hopefully, right? But we found that like a lot of people are just like they kind of want to do it, but they're super intimidated.
Yeah,
they're scared to try it. They think people are going to judge them. And so every session John and I have ever played together, even if there's brand new people on the table, he and I are doing like ridiculous voices right from the get-go.
Just to normalize it.
And it's amazing. Like, you can literally see like that weight lifted off people's shoulders
if
it's their first session. The minute John does a ridiculous voice and then I do a ridiculous voice, they're like, oh, this is, again, this is a comfortable area.
Yeah.
It's a judge-free zone. We're here to have fun.
Yeah. And this guy is terrible, but yet he's committing to it.
Right, but he's committing to this this terrible act, right?
That's great.
And well, so that's good to note. Like, it's, you don't have to be a great role player, like, but just by doing it, like,
you'll get better.
I'm not getting any voice acting gigs for my characters. Yeah. But it does something. It lends itself, again, to that comfort level for the table as a whole. So,
well, one other question. Do you use miniatures at all for your role-playing, or is that a component of it?
Well, I know I don't have to tell you guys this, but, you know, maybe for your listeners. So I'm, you know, I design a lot of miniature tabletop games.
Yeah, yeah.
And my background is miniature games. So, yes, we've played Theater of the Mind before, and that's fine. Again, I would never tell anyone how to approach a game. But because I come from, like, a skirmish war game background, I really, really love to set up a huge table with, like, elaborate terrain that I built. And I'm, like, combining those two things, right? I'm taking the skirmish games and the RPGs, and I'm throwing them together, and I'm treating all our combat encounters like a miniature skirmish game.
Yeah. So that's cool, because that is a nice way to bridge it to, you know, Mordheim and this miniature thing.
I'm just a hyper-visual person. Yeah, like, that's my personality type. Helps. So it helps me, too, as I'm DMing. So.
And it probably, particularly for newer people to role-playing, I think it helps to kind of see and, like, where spatially where things are
and whatnot. It's so exciting for me as a DM and a terrain builder for my war games when I build something for a D&D encounter and we're playing with a new group or someone who hasn't played that many times and I put a piece of terrain on the table or a miniature on the table that I painted, like I get a very tangible visceral reaction from them, like the shock awe moment. You can see the excitement on their face. And I love that so much.
Well, isn't it somewhat of a burden to have to make miniatures and terrain for all the things?
It is, I'm trying to get better about making things multi-purpose. Like, so if I make, you know, I made a terrain piece for Mordheim recently, and then we use that in a campaign session. So I'm trying to get better about having like that crossover. I find it so rewarding that even though it's a pain in the butt, like, I still do like to do it.
And as you were saying, if you make some for your D&D campaign, surely you can use it in Mordheim or any fantasy skirmish thing.
Yeah.
Now, storage for all my terrain, that's an entirely different...
That's the big problem.
I have a computer room, like a guest room in my house that is just... It's a disaster. It's just filled. Just filled with terrain. It's, and anytime I have someone over for the first time, they walk in there and they're like, what in God's earth is this? And I have to explain. I'm like,
I have a problem.
I have a problem. I have a serious problem.
It's like, please take something.
Yeah.
It's like, go to my YouTube
and
channel.
I've done that too. I've started giving away terrain. Yeah. I've given John terrain.
It's at my house now.
Yeah. It's spread into my friend's houses.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's a thing that, like, last year for this event and this year for the NEMO event, we just bring a bunch of our stuff that, like, we don't have place for.
Yeah, you guys brought, like, boxes full of stuff down to Virginia and gave stuff away, right? Yeah.
We brought a similar amount of stuff.
Yeah.
That's
but
awesome.
I don't know. It brought us joy for a time, and then if you can pass that on to other people.
Absolutely.
There's, like, if you think someone would, you know, take it out of a box a bit more often, like, why not?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I definitely took something from you guys in Virginia. I can't remember what it was, but I definitely took something.
I don't
remember. It's been lost to time.
Well, there's that problem again of, like, when someone's offering free shit, it's like, uh-oh.
Sign me up.
I'll add that to the pile.
Yeah.
I will figure out how to use this somehow.
Well, I guess with all of that in mind, do you have ideas of what you would like to get out of this weekend? Are you going to be here tomorrow as well?
We're not going to be here tomorrow.
Oh, no.
It's weird. So, NEMO is, like, close enough to our house. It's like an hour and 15 minute drive.
Yeah.
It's close enough where it doesn't make sense for us to stay, but it's also just far enough where we probably won't
don't
do the
wanna,
trip
yeah.
twice in a row. So, today we're just hanging out and getting a chance to catch up with a lot of people I know and say hi and love that. And then also check out some of these amazing boards. Like, the terrain this year is just insane.
Yeah, there are so many boards.
So many beautiful tables.
I mean, it was great last year, but this, it seems to certainly have stepped it up a level.
Yeah, I think double the amount of tables are out.
Yeah, which is hard to fathom.
Well, and there's the little clip that Tomas sent. He kind of alluded to the fact that Nemo seems to be outpacing the Italian Mordheim event in terms of growth, which is just wild to me. That's mind-blowing.
It is.
Its second year to be, like, basically double in size. I mean, they're going to need another venue next year.
Yeah, I think they... Yeah, next year
they literally won't be able to do this again. At least not here.
Yeah.
So that really says something. But, yeah, we're just trying to enjoy it and hang out. That's all.
Hell yeah. Well, thanks for talking with us.
No, thank you.
And have fun. Well, I look forward to checking out. I mean, I've seen your original YouTube channel, Alex, but I look forward to looking at Legends of the Tabletop, and maybe you should do some Planescape stuff.
we should do some Planescape stuff.
Yeah.
Planescape one
shot. Because, like, I'd like to see some stuff about it, but I'm not going to buy it. And even if I could buy it, but I'm not going to play it.
Well, you have to convince us to play it.
Well,
maybe we'll bring you guys.
We'll do an online session with the four of us.
That would be great. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, but please check us out on the YouTube Legends of the Tabletop. We're going to be live streaming and having a D&D sessions, but then we also have our Game of the Week segment where we're playing different games. We haven't played Mordheim yet, but that is definitely on the to-do list.
Yep.
So
awesome.
For all the Nemo listeners out there, you can get a chance to check it out there, and then on my own personal YouTube channel, Tabletop Wizards, there's some good Mordheim content on there and more to come. So,
yep.
Thank you for having us, guys. Appreciate it.
Great chatting.
Hey, everybody. We're back at the New England Mordheim event 2024. And I'm excited. We're here with Terry of the Hive Scum fame.
Good to be here.
Yeah, helping set up this awesome event for the second year.
Yes.
And we caught you right before you were leaving because you're now a father. That's pretty exciting.
It sure is.
It is very exciting, although...
Maybe a little terrifying, too? Or
definitely terrifying. Yeah. And it's... you know, it's like the hobby side of this means so much to me that, like, I it's hard to fold it in. I mean, granted, it's right in the beginning, but it's like one of those things that, like, I want to do it so badly that I'm trying to find ways to kind of sneak in there, paint something, do something, little bits at a time. But
as
it's working
the
out.
The child maybe isn't sleeping well throughout the night and you're up at all times, so maybe you can paint a thing at a little bit during some of that.
Yeah, I need like a baby Bjorn, you know what I mean? Like hold the baby while you're painting. Just try not to use any like oil washes and stuff. Yeah.
That's fair. Well, and I mean also, as a teacher, that's a pretty demanding job that I feel you could always be preparing or for like the next day classes and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So that in itself is also a stressful thing. But
yeah, and I'll be back to work any second now, so it's just like, you know, that adds a whole nother layer to the complexity, but it's you know, it's good. It's fun. It's fun. And at the end of the day, you know, my daughter's got these cute chubby cheeks and it's hard to not just like hang out with her and you know,
oh, that's good.
Mess with her all
the time.
I mean,
and maybe one day she will also like to build little models and stuff.
You know,
I mean, you shouldn't force it on them, but
they're gonna
like,
hate it. They're gonna say this is the worst thing. It's like whenever you have any sort of thing you like, your kids are supposed to not like it.
Dad, why do you like this shit?
Yeah. It's awful, Dad.
Watch your language, young lady.
No, but you never know. Honestly, it's like I've seen and met and talked to a lot of dads here at the event.
Okay.
Just about what it's like to be a dad. And a lot of them, you know, Robbie Pardis, Duman Apathy Adam, they'll talk about, you know, playing with their kids. And even if it's not necessarily like our hobby related, you know, just sitting down and playing with them with like Legos or building this, building that.
Then you can get them into the gateway of HeroQuest.
Yeah, see, and things like that, you know, board games and different.
Yeah.
I'm trying to build a dollhouse now using some of my terrain building.
That's the spirit.
I mean, find a use for the stuff that's probably filling up a closet somewhere or now filling up the Hive Scum space.
Yes. The good spot to put all the stuff I'm not using.
Hell, we're trying to put our stuff in there, too.
Cool. So, Phil just sat down. How you doing, Phil?
Good. How you guys doing?
Living the dream.
It's true.
Glad to be here. The best convention of the year, probably, and the year hasn't even started.
Wow, that's a statement.
Yeah, that's
you don't know.
We'll see about that.
Yeah, I think it'll be.
You guys think you're gonna go to Adepticon?
Work. That's the plan. I mean, yeah. We got an Airbnb for the day.
Oh hell yeah! So it's like, already kind of going.
It's happening. So,
yeah. We just have to somehow get there.
It's a lot of fun.
Steve just walked by. He's not invited.
He's heckling us.
Yeah.
He fired me from the podcast, so he's not allowed.
That son of a bitch.
Yeah. Phil didn't want me to go.
I didn't want you to go?
Yeah.
Oh. All right. Whatever you say.
Phil, how is it without him at the podcast?
I mean, you were kind of leading the most recent episode.
Well, you know.
Said it was a little harder than you. Or maybe I misremember.
No. Yeah, I was... I didn't realize how much, like, you need to have someone to sort of lead the conversation.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, I'll do it. And then, it wasn't just happening naturally. You actually have to, like, put effort into it.
Yeah, Eric's usually the one that leads all the conversations on Dragged Into the Turbo Lasers. But I decided to try to step up for this. And
He's the event one. A
little bit apprehensive about it, maybe for no real reason. But
he's doing great.
Thank it was fun, you. Though. Our one episode, our last one that we did without Terry, I think is one of our best episodes.
Me too.
I think it's
really good.
It's pretty funny.
Guts theme. Paul
is a very funny guy, a very funny, quick-witted guy, so he makes it easy.
And he had some stories to tell with his time.
Creating the trophies. And
The molten pewter.
Yeah,
and the molten
and there's no stopping
getting
either.
In his eye.
He's got some stuff on deck ready to cast. So
yeah, that's motivation.
He's bringing the jackass side of the hobby. You know what I mean? All these he's playing with all the explosives and
that's
messing
fair.
About.
Yeah, I didn't know the hobby was dangerous, other than maybe cutting yourself with X-Acto blades.
Well,
but
once you meet Paul, you'll understand. Yeah. I mean, you met Paul, but you know
he
what
lives
I mean.
Dangerously.
Yeah,
that's
dangerous
true.
Guy. Yeah. There was a question I had for you, but now I can't remember it.
Shame.
Oh, no, but I do think that the last episode of the podcast was the best one so far. I think it was really good. Plus, Paul being on it keeps the... there's a lot of, like, off-topic chatter that we just talk about. It'll be, like, friend group stuff that comes up, and we'll just have a whole conversation about some random stuff and be like, oh, we have to cut out that 5 minutes where we are just talking about something that nobody knows. Or whatever it was. And Paul kind of kept you grounded.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is really weird doing this without cans on.
I know.
I've never recorded without headphones on before.
Yeah, we don't. Too much. Like, we already bring so much shit. Didn't bring the monitors.
Maybe if we didn't have so much shit that we were trying to offload onto other people, we could have brought monitors.
Yeah. But,
although, with all of our podcast recording, we almost never do it, like, in one room.
Yeah.
So it's always via Discord such that we can just be sitting in our apartments or houses with our headphones on.
So in that last episode that we did, the thing that really got my juices flowing was the question, what type of gamer are you? I don't know if you guys listened to the episode.
We did.
Have you pondered that question? Have you scratched your chin at all and thought about it?
Yes. It is an interesting question, and I feel it's something that has shifted over the years what I like as a gamer. I mean, I feel starting in the hobby in teenage years, I feel I was a bit closer to really liking the granular rules and trying to do all the list building and so forth. But now, having gotten more into the hobby side of things and not playing games that often, I'm much more... enjoy simple rule systems that you can easily pick up and have, you know, emerging narrative sort of stuff without needing to glance into a rule book or something. And knowing that I'm not going to be playing something every week, I don't need all this really granular progression systems so forth.
I do like playing competitive stuff somewhat, but It's a good point you make that if you don't get to play often and you jump in and are playing a competitive thing, it's very likely that you're going to have a negative experience.
And I'll forget the stuff. I feel if I want a more competitive experience, I would much rather play Magic the Gathering or even like some sort of board game where like the entire or the majority of the focus of its development was to create a tight rule system that is essentially contained within a box, as opposed to so much of, I think, the miniature hobby is about the hobby aspect of it and creating a world and converting miniatures.
Yeah.
And
Games Workshop is trying to sell models, so I feel the rule systems came second for a lot of their games.
I think for most of their history, yeah. But I think over the last few years, the sort of like e-sportification of the games,
yeah,
I think they've found that there's an audience for competitive gaming. So
there,
I think
there really is, but
yeah. So I think definitely they've put more effort the last few years into, you know, staying on top of like rules amendments. Yeah.
And I think that is helpful because that, you know, is a side of like the hobby that people do like, and yeah, I think that's still cool. And the fact that it pushes them to be more responsible about their rules development and realizing, you know, people do care about that. And I do agree some of their newer games have explored some interesting territory and streamlining, like Warcry and even Shadespire, like the Warhammer Underworld stuff. I mean, I only played the first, like, cycle of it.
So is that like a hybrid, like, card game,
yes,
too? Yes. Yeah.
You have your models, like the warband you choose, that really doesn't change. You always have those models and their, like, stat card, per se. But the deck of cards that you use to do abilities or get better weapons and such, that is all more of like a, you build your deck around it. And I thought it, I mean, maybe it's gotten unwieldy in the years, preceding years, but I thought it took one of the fun aspects of like a Magic the Gathering kind of deck building thing and incorporated that and allowed you to still feel like you had some ownership and creation about streamlining and focusing a warband on doing one particular thing, but still kind of also keeping it centered on this warband. And I thought it was good, and it was fun.
It was more fun than I probably ever had with Warhammer 40,000.
Yeah. Oh,
Warhammer
40,000's
not fun. I mean, maybe it could be fun.
So I don't know if we've ever talked on the podcast, but years ago, we tried to get Terry into Warhammer 40,000 when I was playing a lot of like 7th, kind of like sweaty competitive, and he definitely was not having fun because he didn't know really the rules, and I would just come in and all guns blazing and just treat him like a punching bag.
And I remember asking every time, like, what do I wound on? What do I hit on? And not knowing how to read the chart.
Oh, yeah.
And being like, "What? Somebody else tell me what I need to roll because I cannot read
and
this
And not
thing.
Knowing that, not having that background, it make, or at least to me, makes games a lot less fun because you don't feel like you have the agency or you're able to make better
decisions.
Strategic choices.
Yeah.
It's the same with board games, too. Like, I would like to read the rules usually, because if you're starting to play a thing and somebody's telling you and maybe not doing a good job, I ultimately don't feel like I'm playing it right or doing as good of a
job
as I could.
It's nice about having sort of like a group of people to work with on this sort of stuff that have different sort of skill sets, because I can always be there to help interpret gameplay and rules, you know, while I'm there. Whereas I always need help with material processes. Like when I was working on my board for this event, I never wanted to be in the studio by myself because I always wanted to check with someone else that I was using materials correctly, going through the process correctly, because I just didn't have confidence in that.
Yes.
And, you know, while I've done it, I still don't know that I would want to just wing it myself. Like, I still feel like I would need someone to help sort of, like, not necessarily hold my hand, but to, like, check me as I'm going.
It's nice to benefit from other people's experience, and I feel you can learn stuff more quickly and feel maybe a little bit more confident about it.
Yeah, that's I think the best way to do this hobby is to do it collaboratively, whether you're coming to it from a gameplay aspect or a creative aspect. a narrative aspect or what? You always want to be... It is a multiplayer game after all, you know?
That's true. I wonder if some of my general feelings of miniature war games not being fun comes from not playing them enough to the point where if I am finally at an instance where I can play them, I don't really know the rules other than you probably need to roll four and up. So I'm maybe a little bit apprehensive about them, and I don't. Whereas with your group, it seems like you're playing games all the time and jumping between different systems, and maybe if I had more familiarity with some of the stuff, I'd feel better about it. But a lot of times that I've played these miniature war games, like you move models up every turn 6 inches, you rolled some dice to shoot, nothing interesting ever happened, and then the game was over.
Yeah, it's funny that you mention, just going back a little bit, where you mentioned things like Warhammer Underworlds.
Yeah.
I have a feeling that we look back very fondly on things like Mordheim and things like Gorka Morka and things like, I don't know, just like any of these smaller games, Battlefleet, Gothic. But they've put out so many little games.
That's true.
Where they've just been like, oh, here's a thing, they put it out in a white dwarf, and then it just literally disappears.
Bombers Over Sulphur River, it was a game about orc, like, fighter bombers doing a bombing run across some river thing.
I didn't play it, but
Epic 40,000, like you use little epic orc fighter bombers and stuff.
See, I think that there's so many little gems that are hidden in their catalog that were just quickly abandoned that people will find going forward. There's like I think it's Gore Chosen or something.
There's a pit
fighting game.
Uh-huh.
That was just like, I read it in a white dwarf, and I had just never seen anybody mention it ever.
I kind of think the gentleman who wrote the rules for the new version of Adeptus Titanicus, as well as the new version of Necromunda and stuff, I think he wrote the Gore Chosen rules, I think.
Just weird games.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, Space Hulk also feels kind of like that,
too. Well, so Space Hulk, I feel if you look back at old GW... I often think that Games Workshop doesn't make very compelling or good games, but they did make some good games. Space Hulk's a classic. It's great. Blood Bowl's great, but yeah, you Blood have Bowl. To be willing to play a four-hour game.
Yeah.
really? Blood Bowl's like that?
It's long.
Yeah. If you actually know how to to play the game and can really go through it, it could be a fair bit quicker, but if you're playing...
And analysis analysis paralysis is a huge thing in it.
It is.
Because it's very much, you could really plan out what you're doing and really decide what's the absolute best thing to maximize your chances for being successful. So you could put a lot of thought into it. And
also, if you're new to it and don't realize that you have to sort of prioritize what actions you're going to do, if you just go into each turn, like, I'm going to do the most exciting thing, like pass the ball, like literally the first thing you could do, you'd fumble the ball, turns over, none of your models do anything, and it's the other person's turn again, and you get fucked. So, like, you kind of have to know how to play it, and if you don't prioritize those actions and do the safe actions, like, you could have a pretty unfun experience.
Yeah.
But it's mechanically, it's very solid. And also, they made the same dude who I think wrote Gore Chosen and Adeptus Titanicus and such, they wrote a kind of a simpler, is it called Blitz Bowl or Blitz Ball?
Blitz Bowl or Blitz Ball?
I don't know.
Blitz Ball is Final Fantasy X.
That's Final Fantasy X. That's the underwater, water polo or something. Yeah.
So it must be Blitz Bowl.
Regardless, it's like a bit like a simplified version of Blood Bowl.
Like half the teams are half the size.
And, I mean, it is different, but it uses the same dice, and it is like a spiritual successor, but it's a bit simpler and quicker, and it's really good and fun, and I think it has some more modern board game design elements around it.
I just think reflecting on a lot of these random games that they've put out, but looking at it through the eyes of, like, you know, like a kit bashing mentality of people who are a little bit more flexible on rules or who are willing to kind of tie their own rules into a pre-existing, you know, taking something like Gore Chosen and like using kit bashing your own little pit fighters, coming up with little rules for them and doing like
taking something like Gore Chosen and a grinder.
Oh, no.
Now you're talking about grinder.
Here we go.
Oh, no.
The so when I think of small games like that, now that makes me think, like, maybe that's just people, like, in the design studio who, like, in their off time are sort of doing these things and just run it by their supervisor and say, hey, let's try and publish this, you know, and just getting the, you know what I mean?
Because I think that could be cool. And, I mean, obviously, you know, Steve's, like, seemingly always working, tinkering, thinking of a new game or whatnot. Having a space that you can design stuff, try out new ideas, because not everything's going to be amazing or work that well. Like, you kind of need to play test some of the things.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Games Workshop has done that. I mean, maybe with its more modernization tries to streamline and compartmentalize stuff more than it used to. I'm not sure.
And I'd rather that than, like, just sticking to 40K, which, I mean, obviously they do a lot, but just
they,
being like,
they do.
We're not designing anything else. We're just going full in 40K. You know, it's like, you're only going to ever probably have the Warcry, the Kill Team, the 40K, the Age of Sigmar stick. I mean, who even knows? I don't even know if the old world will eventually, like, stick, you know,
or if it'll
kind of fall
off.
But, like, I appreciate the level of just being like, let's just try. Who cares? Put out a book. See if it works.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then we can pick that up for really cheap because nobody wants
it. You know, I think right now that there's enough competition coming from, like, indie developers that I think Games Workshop probably feels compelled to put out as many, you know, bring back as many of their
existing.
That's
true.
But I still go back to the notion there are tons of indie developers making lots of great miniature games, but GW's still making great models. Like, people still buy the models and they just play them with a different system. It all ultimately doesn't even matter. Like, Games Workshop's still going to do fine. Like, ultimately, like, the shit that we're building is all, like, within the Warhammer universe. We may not be playing their
rule
sets.
They don't even need to sell models. They got Amazon money now, you know?
That's true.
I think Games Workshop will still try to make better and better games, but
it's good on them.
I don't think they need to be worried that smaller developers are making better games, because the smaller developers probably won't at least have the visibility and certainly not have the resources to make as many nice models as Games Workshop will. So people will still buy GW models. I don't think they have anything to worry about with that.
And it's like, even with the, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if you could call it, like, Disneyfication of things, where, like, things just become, like, more streamlined and more more nice and more, like, smooth around the edges. I'm sure that Warhammer has kind of gone through that and it becomes smoother and smoother
as things
go on.
I mean, Space Marines are now
noble heroes.
Yeah. Noble heroes that you're supposed to aspire to, whereas the Imperium's a terrible, fascist, like, authoritative dictatorship, like, horrible place. I don't think Space Marines are supposed to be the heroes, but they are now.
Yeah, but I can't imagine
changed.
They'll ever, like, steal, you know, they'll ever take a Forbidden Psalm kind of approach or something where it's, like, really gritty, really dark, and it's meant to be that gritty and dark. I can't see them
funny,
ever
we're,
kind of
we're having a conversation
that.
Last night and with Ian, IPT Minis, and he was pointing out that, like, the heavy metal painting style that's sort of, like, obviously, like, the antithesis to, like, the grimdark style, it's really just meant for marketing purposes to highlight every detail on the model so that it, you know, you see the product that you're buying. It's not really necessarily a reflection of what the model can be, or maybe even what the original sculptor intended it to be, or the concept artist.
Like, I feel they're always technically amazing, but I don't necessarily know if they always make the models look their best, because you don't need to see every little pouch or button a different color so you know I'm getting all that detail.
Well, yeah,
because
totally.
It often can be somewhat distracting, and painting it to the same standard but just in a slightly more muted style, I think more fits can fit the setting better and is bit more to my taste.
Same.
But it makes sense. Like, they want to sell those models. They want you to know that they have the technology to do this and make that. So
to put little trinkets and designs and filigrees on everything. Yeah. And
it's like when you see the Nurgle models and you know they're not supposed to be, like, bright green and, like, almost shiny looking. Yeah. But then you see some of, like, Blanche's, like, Plague-O-Grins, and they're, like, oozing pus, and they have, like, weird, like, the red blood that's dripping from all the different, like, wounds. And it's like, yeah, that's what a, you know, that's what it's supposed to look like.
Well, considering that John has, like, conceptualized so much and so many models have kind of been born from those concepts.
Yeah.
His art style and painting style is certainly not what ends up on the box art.
Yes.
Like, at all, but
be wild to think if it did, you know?
Yeah.
Be wild to think if that made more of an impact than just, like, illustrations.
I mean, I guess his art was on the second edition 40K box set and the newer Epic 40,000. But with that artwork, he put, I don't know if I'd say more time, but he made things less, more defined and detailed than maybe he would on some of his, like, sketches, I would say.
Yeah.
Like, one of the box, second edition box art, like, is a little
the
bit
Blood
different.
The Blood Angels. Yeah.
With the Blood Angel dude standing there is a little bit different than a lot of his current sketches.
I feel as the style has changed over the years, which in itself is neat, I feel, with any artist to see how they shift and find their own voice, per se, and what interests them and the mediums they use and such, I think is always cool, and knowing a bit about that process I think is exciting too.
Yeah.
Hell yeah, brother.
Well, we've already talked longer than maybe you wanted to stay here, Terry.
Listen,
so thanks.
I could talk to you guys
here
all day. You're amazing. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being here.
Good
Anytime. Luck being a father.
Oh,
it's true.
Thanks. I'll see you guys
good
in 18
luck with
years.
That thing.
Yeah,
pretty
thanks.
Soon off to college.
Yeah, yeah. Any day now.
Yeah,
get a
any
real
day
job.
Now. Yeah. Finally.
Well, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Phil.
Hey, everybody. We're back at the New England Mordheim Open 2024. The Mordheim event just finished. I'm here with a bunch of cool people. Steve, who helped run this.
Hello.
Scott Amancer, Scott.
Hello.
And Shane.
Shane from Somber Arcane.
Shane from Somber Arcane.
Yeah, I'm playing later.
Like,
you know,
some cool Dungeon Synth stuff.
Yeah, it's Dungeon
All
Synth.
Right.
That's exactly right.
All right.
It's nerd music. It's like it's like if Game of Thrones did more drugs.
Well, I saw about the Dungeon Synth. How did you come to that genre of music? Is that something that you've been, presumably you've played in other bands and or other genres, or
yeah,
is
you
like
clocked
ambient
me.
Has ambient sort of stuff been always your jam?
So, I mean, I used to do that stuff back in the 90s with, like, you know, like, I mean,
like Brian Eno sort of.
I love Brian Eno. That's one of my favorite artists. I could talk about Brian Eno for hours, but in the interest of moving along, I'll say that I started making very, very sort of cinematic music that nobody gave a shit about in the 90s. And then I met Josh. We started making music. He's my bandmate. And then we kind of just made this ambient music. He builds his own, like folk instruments, like lyres and harps.
That's cool.
And shit. And I saw him play, and we played D&D together, and I was like, yo, let's fucking do something, right? And the idea was that we would make sort of semi-ambient music, and then it escalated into very cinematic sort of music. And then we found out that the dungeon synth was the genre.
And
they accepted us with open arms.
Yeah.
And we kind of like just kind of went down that path. And that's kind of how we came along, you know, came to Dungeon Synth. You know, we're all metal fans, so we knew about black metal and, like, ambient sort of, like, side projects of black metal
and
artists and
Mortis
such.
Is
Mortis
stuff. His,
yeah.
Him dressing up as a troll.
That's
it's
right.
cool.
And, we have the Mortis that's tape at our studio.
I mean,
it plays a lot.
It approaches on being cool. The imagery approaches on
my,
being
my
cool.
My favorite
well, we
Mortis
have the,
story.
We have the video. Mortis VHS.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I think the music's cool. Like, some of the imagery is trying a little hard, but that's part of the...
I love try hard, though. Yeah. What's the opposite of try hard? Don't give a fuck?
I mean, yeah? That's fair. That's
so anyway,
fair.
Favorite Mortis story is dude is, like, doing his full-ass goblin makeup in our fucking practice space while we're doing our festival, right? And Josh is, like, my bandmate is in full armor, right? And Mortis is like Captain Morganing up against the mirror in our practice space, putting on his makeup, and he looks over at Josh and he says, "Why the fuck do you dress up, mate?" He's got like a Swedish, British accent, because, like, you know, they do like UK English and Sweden.
Yeah.
He's like, "Why the fuck do you dress up, mate? It's a waste of time." Meanwhile, he's putting on a full ass goblin nose.
That's pretty funny.
And we're high as hell, like, dude, like, what? Anyway, that's my favorite Mortis story. Great guy.
So I read an interview with him on... Are you familiar with Holy Mountain Printing? They print T-shirts and stuff. And they have a little magazine with... They just do interviews and cool things. And they have an interview with him. And the amount of times he says the word fuck in that interview is outrageous.
To the point
of being comical.
No, I mean, well, here's the thing. Like, there's... When you truly master English, even if English is not your first language, fuck is the word that, like, acts as an anchor.
Yeah,
right? Let's
be
honest.
It can be anywhere, and maybe should be.
Yeah.
It's an adjective, it's a noun, it's a verb.
Yeah. My man is obviously an English major.
So, I don't even know where I'm going with
that's all right.
This.
You were talking about how the Mortis aesthetic is slightly corny, but the music is good, I think, is what you said.
Like,
yeah,
it's cool. Like, I like it. It feels like
I feel that way about a lot of stuff, though.
I feel that way about,
like,
me.
Even going to, like, Ned's.
I feel that way about my life, Doug. I dress up like a wizard semi-professionally.
That's
and
cool.
And take, like, tequila shots out of potion bottles. Like, yeah, that shit's corny as fuck, but you know what?
It's fun.
So much fun.
It's fun. And
so much fun.
And I think it's neat with the Northeast Dungeon Siege thing to see how much of a market there is for it. And, like, lots of people do.
I love how you call it a market. To me, it's just a shit show party. So here's the thing. The first Ned's was seven people in my friend Isaac's basement. And we were like, yo, let's actually put on a show. And then it turned into a sold out three day show with Mortis headlining. Like,
well,
what the fuck?
When did that? When was
2019?
2019.
Yeah.
And... Okay, and how did COVID probably made that not happen for a few years?
Yeah, COVID put a squash on it, but here's the thing, right? I'm going to tell this story because fuck Josh. He ain't here to defend himself. Josh is my bandmate and the cat who organizes Ned's.
Yep.
And when COVID hit, we were 3 days before the festival and they were like, travel.
Yeah.
And he was like, fuck this. I was like, let's stream on Twitch. He was like, that's some nerd shit. Fuck that bullshit. And I know my guy. So I was like, oh, yeah, I'm not going to tell him we should do it. I'm not going to argue for this. But I'm going to be like, yeah, if I was to do it, this is how I'd do it. Now, my guy's an engineer. So once he gets that in his mind, he'd be like, how are we going to do it, right?
Yeah.
So we ended up going to Twitch for 2 years, and it changed our lives. Like, now we have a Twitch channel, Northeast Dungeon Siege TV. People send us fucking ads and shit, and we stream the live performances now that we're post, quote-unquote, post-COVID.
Yeah, so beyond just then having the event in person, you're also streaming it such that people can experience
500 and some odd people logged in for the first fucking show in 2020.
That's awesome.
Yo, can you imagine what it's like? We didn't know how to stream 3 days before we threw a 500-person fucking show on Twitch. Like, fuck my life, dude. That was such a nightmare. We streamed everybody live. So I had to work with all these dorks who barely knew how fucking computers worked stream their set live. And I was the person responsible for, like, setting everything up. And then they were talking, like, in between acts. And I was like, yeah, we ain't ready. Like, you need to talk shit for another 5 minutes. And they're like, Shane, my guy, you're the talk shit person. Like, you know what I mean? Like, anyway, it was great.
Well, so most of the people didn't know stuff about technology and stuff. Like, I would have thought that perhaps a lot of the musicians would be like gearheads that are all
Okay.
A lot of them are probably playing synthesizers.
Here's
and
your
stuff,
spicy
right?
take for the podcast. Dungeon synth artists don't know shit about fuck when it comes to technology. They come in with their Casio keyboards and they don't understand what an eighth inch jack is.
Okay.
And they show up at the show saying, yeah, I got a keyboard. I forgot my power supply. And then you're like, okay, let's scramble around for our fucking universal power supply so that we can make so you can make a show. And I love every single one of these dorks, but...
Well, so
yo,
now,
Dungeon Synth Artists,
you...
if you pardon me one second. Dungeon Synth Artists, if you're listening to me, get a fucking quarter inch or eighth inch Y cable that goes from a fucking eighth inch headphone jack or a quarter inch jack to plug your shitty Casio keyboard in using stereo to fucking DI boxes using quarter inch cables. Eighth inch to quarter inch Y cable, go to Guitar Center. They know what the fuck it is. You need it. Get a quarter inch adapter and you can show up at any show and actually perform without sending people into a fucking anxiety fit. Sorry, carry on.
Oh, no, you're good. I mean, I was just going to follow up with a question about that. So now that you've put on a bunch of these, presumably you have a bunch of those, the cables that you
think
will
need, got a stack of them.
Because they probably don't have them.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
But we're a shit show. Like, we do drugs, right? So we end up with, like, boxes of cables, and then we forget where they are. So still, show up with the cables you need. And if you don't know what you need, ask me. I'm, like, a very... fucking amicable motherfucker, I will tell you.
Hell yeah.
You got me after like four shots of tequila. You're gonna ask me shows about like questions about running their show. You're gonna get the real talk.
Alright, very good. How long has Sombra Arcane been a project?
So we started in 2017.
Okay.
And we've been going pretty steady since then.
How do you release your material?
Mostly on cassette. We also release digitally on Spotify and all that shit.
Bandcamp. You probably have a Bandcamp page or don't have a Bandcamp.
Yeah, Bandcamp.
Page.
Yeah, you got to have Bandcamp if you're a DIY artist.
Well, I mean, that's my favorite of the platforms to, like, buy things digitally.
Here's my real talk opinion. I love Bandcamp, but this fucking diamond clown that, like, created Bandcamp is so self-important and goofy to me, I have the hardest time taking him seriously. Bandcamp recently sold to Epic Games and then got purchased by like some other like giant fucking company. I don't remember.
Yeah, I remember when it was purchased by Epic Games and everybody was worried that like, wait, why the hell is
things
Epic
haven't
Games,
actually like to be
like,
honest,
why is Epic Games buying this?
Things haven't actually changed much since Epic Games bought it, so that's nice. You know?
But yeah, then I do recall.
I was nervous.
I do recall that somebody they sold it to somebody else now and. I don't know, I guess nothing.
I was just talking
to
somebody else about, like, no matter how much you think things are going to last forever, they don't.
Yeah.
I'm 835 years old. I remember when Netscape came out and everybody was like, yo, no, Netscape, Alta Vista's here forever, right? And like, now all of a sudden, these are, like, historical things that, like, you know, 5,000 people
vein,
remember.
Like, the Sears catalog and Sears stores used to be, like, that was... where you bought things.
That's a good point.
Now,
Netscape is the Sears catalog of web browsers. That's I love how you put that.
And now, Sears is gone. And now it's like Amazon's the big thing. Like, you get things everywhere.
Dude, Amazon's
going to
die, too.
It's almost certainly won't be forever.
In 20 years. So what's what's an Amazon equivalent? The Nile. So you think of the Amazon River, and now you have the Nile. So in 20 years, Amazon's going to be a thing of the past, and Nile distributors is going to take their place.
Will be the new thing. But yeah, so that's an interesting thing to think about, how something that seems so prominent now almost certainly won't be
that forever. Everything you fucking love and have come to rely on, including your family, is gonna fucking die and leave you alone.
Well, I mean, that
is, I think, what you're
true.
Saying.
That's
yeah,
that's true. Also, talking about things dying, but then maybe coming back. I mean,
cassettes.
Presumably,
yo,
everybody thought like shitty audio quality.
We sell so many cassettes, dog. Like, what the fuck is... And then people love that shit, and I'm like, I'm 44, like, you know, in human years, and, like, when... I was around during the 90s when cassettes was the format.
Yeah.
And when CDs came out, I was like, oh my God, finally I can go to the song I want. And now everybody's like, oh, these old golden days of cassettes. And I'm like, do you have any fucking idea how tedious cassettes are?
And, like, the quality isn't very good. They certainly don't last forever because it's just some magnetic tape.
I broke my Wu-Tang 36 Chambers tape and my Death Individual Thought Patterns tape and my fucking Mariah Carey fucking Emotions tape. Do not judge me. All right? And at the end of all that, you know what that left me with? That left me with a deep appreciation and love for streaming.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden I'm in a genre that like holds cassettes as sacrosanct.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting.
It's wild. The only good thing about cassettes, and this is true of vinyl as well. Sit down, Dave. I just met this dude, Dave. He's now my best friend. He's from Toronto. The six, they call it,
you need to
right?
tell us how you feel about cassette tapes.
Yeah, what do you feel about cassette tapes?
I like them on my shelf.
You like them on your shelf, but you don't have like a cassette player, right?
No,
yeah.
No.
So okay. That's the thing. They are now artifacts. But the one thing about cassette tapes that is worth anything, and generally speaking, cassettes aren't worth anything. Don't tell my Dungeon Synth friends I said this. But you have a side A and a side B. So as an artist, you can curate two different environments.
Well,
that's the only good thing about cassette.
Well, you can pull out the tape and make some cool tape loops like our friend Brian Eno.
That's right. Or if you fucking, if you buy a Somber Arcane tape and you hate it, I want to give you full ass fucking feel free entirely to throw tape over the fucking copy protection tab and record something that you like better on it.
Well, but let's be real. If people buying the Somber Arcane tapes, they're buying them, they're putting them on a shelf, and they're listening to the shit on Spotify.
That's right. That's
you know that.
Right.
That's what
exactly
they're doing.
That's exactly right. That's why we spend the $50 a year for DistroKid to put it on Spotify. Otherwise, otherwise, those tapes just... Yo, I get tape trades on tour all the time with other bands.
Yeah.
You know what happens to those tapes?
You
they get broken in my fucking backpack.
Yeah.
And then I bring them home and I go, oh...
Make terrain.
I loved meeting that person. Oh. And then I put the broken cassette tape in a box somewhere to die.
Well, at least you're not taping over the things.
That's true. You know what? Yo, funny story. There was this fucking Nazi who released a tape on my friend's label, and he didn't know that this dude was like a clown. And I was like, yo, that dude is kind of a clown. So he took all the tapes off the table, and he recorded my album over that person's shit and released my album over that Nazi nonsense. Anyway, so when we were kids, or when we were young, not kids, I was touring with
44 is not that old.
Yeah, you know, it feels like 800.
Yeah.
It feels like 800. But like, when I most of my life I've been a hip-hop artist, and me and my buddy used to go on tour a lot, and we would be handed these CDs, because CDs were cheap and easy to burn.
Yeah.
We would literally, and I don't fucking advocate for this, because like, littering is bad, but we would fucking listen to these demo CDs that fucking dorks handed us while we were on tour, and we would make the throw it out the window or not call, and then we would just throw these demos of these people who were sharing their life's passion with us right out the window because their art was garbage. And like, I almost feel bad about it, but only because of the ecological impact.
Yeah.
If you make art that's garbage, do better.
Well, I mean, maybe it wasn't garbage to them. If it meant
of course
something
it wasn't
to them,
garbage to them.
If it meant something to them, it's
if it means
worth
something to
something.
You and your friends, then I want y'all to enjoy that. But don't fucking waste your time coming to the show and handing it to me. Real talk. I got enough shit to carry. I need a new pair of underwear or socks. Like, if you give me a pair of fresh new socks while I'm on tour and your demo CD, I will absolutely listen to that.
Yep. Well, so how much touring do you do with Somber Arcane?
We try and tour twice a month. Illusion. Lunchtime, doubly so, right?
Yeah.
But if we tour twice a year. We try and do some local tours, and then we try and do like a national thing, like a West Coast thing.
Yeah.
Oh, they're turning the music up.
Yeah, we maybe need to stop.
Oh, come on.
It's been real.
I was just getting into it.
It's been real. I'd say I'll buy your cassette, but...
I'll give you a cassette. Do you have a cassette player?
My brother Eric still has one.
If I give you a cassette, will you listen to it and then throw it away?
Or I won't throw it away.
All right. Well, make your decision after. Email me and tell me if you think we suck.
Okay. I mean, I'll probably buy your music on Bandcamp if it's there.
Thank you so much for having me on your podcast.
It's been real. Thank you so much. Thanks for getting letting me know
buy
your
you
opinion.
A pair of socks.
Yes. I love it.
Hell yeah. Hey, everybody, we're back. We're, I guess, drawing towards the end of day one of Nemo, or at least the end of the main festivities. Bands are soon going to be on. Bassist just played, and now Steve's here.
I'm here. Hello.
Hey, Steve.
Hi. Hello, Eric and Greg.
How are you feeling about the event thus far?
Oh, it's a wonderful, wonderful event. I am very tired. It's only day one. It was a wonderful turnout. It's really hard for me to take it in and see what's going on the floor because I'm just running around the whole time. So I guess the question should be posed to you of what was your perception of the event? I would like to hear your take on it. Or did you already talk about this?
I don't know if I didn't.
Yeah, I don't think we really talked about it. We talked a little bit about Dungeon Synth with Shane.
Yeah, that was a really cool conversation. I'm really glad I sat here for 5 minutes. That's going to be really great content for your podcast.
I mean, I think people will be interested.
Maybe.
It'll be very funny.
Yeah.
Shane is a funny guy.
Yeah. But I mean, so the last year when I was here, I didn't play last year either, and I just wandered around and talked to people. And, I mean, I had a great time. It looks like things went really smoothly, and things I think went smoothly last year too.
It seemed like everyone seemed to be having a good time. Like, I feel there were even more boards here this year, like all of them really spectacular. People were excited, happily chatting about how their games went. Like, I think it was really nice, really good. Captured.
I mean, you won an award for your board this year too, right?
Yeah,
finally. Another.
I took home third place.
Third place. You know,
I won first place last year.
Yeah.
Some might say that I rigged it, but that is not
true.
I voted for yours last year.
See? And Paul, while we were doing the counting, would not show me what the tally was the whole time for the boards. So it was a mystery until it wasn't. Bobby was a well-deserved victory there, though, as well as was Blurs for second place.
Yeah,
no.
They were really cool. Like, and Blurs, it was huge.
It's insane. Like, it's like so overwhelmingly big.
Yeah. I mean, imagine if you were trying to play, is it the breakout mission where you have to get off there?
That's cool. I mean, would like to play that. That sounds fun.
It probably would be
Maybe
fun.
Maybe not with Wardheim.
Try to break out of there with dwarves and get nowhere.
Listen, that goes out to all the dwarf players. Maybe rethink your list next year.
Yeah, maybe don't play dwarves, right?
I mean, there seemed to be a bunch, or I talked to a bunch of people
Look
with dwarf
guy.
Lists.
Look at him going by right now with the sword. Fuck yeah.
Incredible.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. No, but yeah, I think it was good. Are you excited about the rest of the evening, tomorrow? Anything really standing out that you want to be doing?
I want to sit down for a little bit.
I mean, that's fair.
I would like to play a game of something. Well, we have the World Championship of Flames of Orion tomorrow, which Greg is on a path to win.
Am I?
You are the current reigning champion.
Like, I don't even remember being the champion. Like, I won some games last time. That, but didn't other people won?
You were the most winning. Yeah. You won the most games.
Okay.
So you are the world champion as of right now.
Damn. Have Paul, to hold on to that.
Paul would argue that you are not and that he is the rightful world champion, but we will prove it tomorrow.
Okay. I mean, maybe I won't be able to hold it together tomorrow.
I don't think you'll fumble the ball. I think you're going to stand strong and it'll be a great time.
That's the spirit.
It'll at least be a great time.
Dark spirit will live on in infamy.
Yeah.
That's right. Crush him under your steel shod boot.
That's right.
Kick him into a bunker and
well, so
then
for
explode.
The musical performances tonight, how did that come about? And are most of them local? I know certainly Chain to the Bottom of the Ocean is. And
yeah.
After talking to Shane, presumably he's...
Somber Arcane is Worcester area.
Yeah.
Unsheathed Glory. I want to say he said he was from, well, maybe I don't want to dox where he's from, but
yeah,
he's
but
from
like,
the
not
area.
Like Portland.
Yeah, he's local. And I think that was the whole the idea was getting a bunch of local artists to play, but have it not be a punishingly loud show that overwhelms the gaming aspect of the event. Because, you know, we're all here because we like to game. The music is like a bonus.
Yeah. Well, presumably, Chained to the Bottom of the Ocean will be kind of loud, right?
Yeah, I imagine they will be very loud. They are a very, very loud band.
Acoustic sets?
No, no. But they, you know, it'll be a good time. You know, they'll probably play 25 minutes and then go home and go to bed like normal people.
That's
what I want in a set.
Well, I've seen a bunch of shows and I'm getting older. Like, I would rather them like 30 minute sets. Get on there, play some cool stuff, get off.
Yeah, go home.
Yeah.
But we'll probably still be here gaming after they play.
Yeah, and that's
fine. I have to go tell the bartender that that's going to happen, and hopefully she doesn't get really bummed out.
Yeah.
But that's okay.
Yeah, that's fine.
What were you most excited about?
I would just say seeing people in the community and talking to everybody and... Like
seeing the fucking studio, man.
Oh, yeah?
Well, seeing the studio was pretty great. It's a cool place.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. We'll probably end up there tomorrow night after the event if we clean up in time.
Yeah,
come on. Oh, Paul Mordheim is here now.
Paul Mordheim is here.
Hell yeah.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Living the dream.
Yeah.
Every day, all the time.
Oh, yeah. You guys have a good time today?
It was great. I mean, I didn't play any Mordheim, but... That's fine. I mean,
saw lots of games.
I don't remember the rules.
Really high level of hobby here this week.
That was the bar. There was a standard, and they rose to the occasion.
Absolutely, it really exceeded my expectations. You know, we had done so much prep for this, just for like things to fill in the boards and everything like that, and everybody brought shit that was just like fully dressed. It was just really, really impressive.
It's really funny thinking about how much work we put in, and then. Like I would say about 60% of it not being needed.
Right. Yeah, that was really what was remarkable. So if this is the way things are going to go in the future, I'm really excited.
Well, so with all of the work you did and all the boards you made, what's happening with that stuff? Is it just going back
to the studio
somewhere?
Oh, it's going in the dumpster.
The dumpster.
Nice. Dumpster tomorrow morning.
Out the door, on the floor.
Yeah, well, luckily we have Gage here, and he's going to help us sort it all out, and we're going to containerize everything. So it's going to pretty much, the things that we're going to play with at home, we're going to keep in, you know, separated from the things that are going to be just for the events.
So
that way we can keep everything dust-free and hopefully not broken, you know.
That's good.
Most of the flat boards, since now, I think that this group has pretty much moved past just the flat boards with a little bit of like simple adornments.
Scatter type stuff.
So we'll just repurpose all that stuff into maybe like fantasy boards or, you know, for the different games
gluing
we play.
It directly to a board and making it into something,
Yep. Yeah, so we got a lot of different directions to go with some of that stuff.
Well, that's good. That's exciting.
Are you going to play any Mordheim on your own time, or is like you just prepare for a Mordheim event and then never play it again?
It's kind of been like that. I played a couple games like when Bill Ford was around, and then when we went to Virginia, we played a bunch of games with like the Griffin Brothers and things. But it was odd because like when we got together and we all met each other, we started playing a ton of Mordheim, and like more Mordheim than I'd ever actually even played. And then once we started getting ready for this, we never played. And then once I've been meeting all these people through these events, I've been... discovering like a whole new another side of the wargaming hobby that I had no idea about, you know, and so less Mordheim than ever, but we'll see. I'm gonna try
facilitating
it.
Facilitating others to play more Mordheim, which that is satisfying in itself.
Yeah,
right?
certainly. Exactly. It's more enjoyment out of that and like seeing all the people getting down than actually playing the game itself.
Tattooing is happening on the premise
directly
today.
Directly next to Greg.
It's true.
It's happening right beside me. Not to me, but
can you
right
see it on
beside
your monitor?
Me.
When it goes off?
It's not too bad. Like, it's, I don't know, like 45 decibels or something. It's not too bad, so.
And admittedly, the building here, things are pretty quiet for all the number of people here.
Did you go in the bar at all during this?
Yeah.
How loud was it by comparison?
I didn't hear anything.
That's crazy.
I couldn't really hear anything when I was in the bar.
That was like the studio last night. It was like so incredibly loud in that room, having like almost 20 people in there.
Yeah.
To the point that I almost couldn't think. And I would leave the room and you couldn't hear anything. And you open the door, and it's like booming, echoing voices. Everyone's having a great time yelling. You shut the door, it's quiet.
I mean, it's crazy. I only went into the bar there to get money out of the ATM, and I didn't hear anything about the commotion going on out here in the main hall.
It's a good venue.
So, yeah, pretty good. And, like, nobody, none of the older people at the bar were complaining or laughing about all of the young, over-enthusiastic people.
Yeah, Pat went over there. He said that they were like, they're in there like, yeah, they do it. And they just don't stop. They keep going and going all night long.
Oh, the Adam's mom? The,
is that
the
one? Yeah. That's pretty funny.
That's funny.
They build it all themselves. You know that? Yeah, that's crazy. Did you guys hear about the train convention in town?
No.
So these guys, when all the out-of-towners were checking into the hotels, people were saying, oh, are you here for the train convention? And they're like, how did they get that twisted around from what we're doing, you know? And then somebody sent on Discord.
Is there genuinely a train convention?
At the Big E.
Yeah, somebody sent a picture on Discord of a license plate that said O Lionel. And I'm like, oh my God, there actually is a train.
Maybe Neil Young is apparently a big train guy. Maybe Neil Young's there.
If only. If only.
Well, so I didn't realize that there was a... of course, there's a train, a model train. It's probably model train convention or just people enthusiastic about trains, and they probably also like
I think it's all.
Trains.
I think it's all of it.
All things to do with trains.
Yeah, Gage's stepdad was at the train event today. They came directly from the train event.
Oh, nice.
They were at the train event probably three times longer than they were here, but that's okay.
That's fine. Because I certainly remember some of the earlier episodes of the podcast, you talking about going to one of the model train stores and how people being, some of the employees there being really stoked that people were in there and like buying like weathering compounds and stuff, which is pretty funny.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I can't think of the name of that store. It's in the like mill building. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah, that's Time Machine Hobby.
Okay.
Yeah, Time Machine Hobby is great.
Because I could really see how, like, who does model train stuff anymore? I mean, surely people do, but it's probably not what it maybe had been 30 years ago.
Right. And that's what I would think, right?
And it could maybe be a little bit depressing to all those people to see, like, people just aren't doing it.
Right. I mean, there's obviously a whole industry that we've seen develop where people just repurposing train materials for and marketing them to us. And
yeah,
upcharging
it's true.
It, you know, it's pretty crazy.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
When are we going to do the 28 train setup?
I was really thinking about it because Alex wrote in Dead by Lead, there's a train heist with the train moving across the board and all the different mechanics of interacting with the train itself.
Yeah.
And he wrote them all out. So I was like really thinking about that.
That's
like a slow-moving train.
Yep, yeah,
good
across.
Use.
Well,
yeah.
Paul, are you running some Dead by Lead games tomorrow? Is that the plan?
I think I'm definitely going to, yeah.
Hell yeah.
I got to stop by the shop and grab some stuff, but we're going to try some games out, yeah.
I mean, have you played it a bunch then? Or?
I did a couple sample games at home. Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, nothing crazy. We haven't like messed with the campaign yet or anything like that.
Yeah, okay.
You know? Yeah, I'm working on a little narrative campaign to bring to Adepticon. It's going to be three or
Does
four games.
Does that involve a train?
It may.
Okay, I'll kick him a chair.
You got a lot. Yeah, if anybody out there knows how to what size trains scale with our models, you know, like 28 true scale, 28. Yeah, more historical. A lot of the cowboy stuff is on the smaller side, so
yeah,
it scales well with that. I'd be happy to hear about it for sure. The guy, actually, funny about the trains, the guy who works at Time Machine is the guy who gave Pat and I our first demo game of Mordheim and sold
really?
The box. Yep.
Insane.
Yeah.
Insane.
Came full circle.
But presumably that was not, or this hobby shop with the trains, it's not just a train shop, or is it just
a
train
They do like
stuff?
Trains, RC, they have like a Gundam rack, you know,
okay.
Scale,
okay.
Like
some
scale models,
military.
Yeah, and that
but
kind of
so
stuff.
So it's not like
it's predominantly
a gaming
train store
per se.
They have
it's
a gaming
scale
store.
Models.
Right, it is scale models, and that's it. And on the third floor of this old building, they have the New England's largest train setup, and it's absolutely insane. Like you walk in around the building, and it's running. Huh. And there's like a team, like every third Sunday or something like that. There's a team of like a dozen guys who come in to operate the different switches and you know the trains lane selection, rail selection. It's absolutely incredible. And the level of hobby there, I sent these guys a picture when I was in there. It was just really incredible.
Well, that's fun.
Yeah, lots to learn there for sure. But yeah, the dude who works there, he used to work at Games Workshop back in the
90s. Okay.
Yep. Yeah, he was a red shirt, you know. And
damn.
I told him he talks the same. He's the same kind of guy. He's pretty cool.
Do they still play Mordheim?
He said he hadn't in a long time. He said he was doing historical, like the small ones.
Okay.
Now. Yeah,
what, you didn't show up today?
No, he didn't. Fucking well, I think that's more on me though, because I never went when I went back. He wasn't there, and I never sent him
the
flyer. Yeah, I didn't send him the flyer. So that is on me, not on Kevin.
Maybe next year.
If you're not on In Rust We Trust, how do you even know about these things?
Listen, people have been asking. Yeah, they said info.
They said it was not well marketed, but I mean, it's like we talked to every person we know online to do it, and it's like unless you want us. To, like start paying for advertising or something
or
like that.
Or a website.
Sure.
Yeah, my blog only goes so far.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that is probably the next logical step is to make a website to but Steve has the blog. I guess we just have to really pump it out more.
So I guess with that in mind, I was talking to a gentleman today who drove up from Philadelphia that was not on In Rust We Trust, and I think he said he heard about it from Uncle Adam in one of his YouTube videos.
Oh, yes, he did make a post in his recent YouTube
I think it was
video.
In January, or maybe at the
very
end of
the
year.
The High Honor Award for podcast.
Yeah,
I think
it's the best podcast award.
Yes. Congratulations, Hive Scum.
Incredible. But so, people do find out about it.
That's true.
We
or
do.
Or did find out about it without just In Rust.
What do you think I'm gonna pose a question to Paul. I'm losing my voice now. Where do you see this being next year?
Wow. I'm thinking we definitely need to go bigger. You know,
Like space or just
space wise. Yeah. I think that going to three rounds today was a really great thing, and that was based.
I agree with that.
That was based on feedback that I got from the participants in the first event.
Yeah.
And so with that in mind, I'm kind of seeing that, you know, it is more really about the community. So I don't think the Mordheim event really needs to go any larger than 100 tickets, but we need to go to a bigger venue to let more people in here to experience it. I think
that would make sense.
Yeah, you know, and more areas for people to do their own things or show what they're working on.
Were four games played last year? How many were played last year?
I think it was five, actually.
Jesus Christ, did I actually do that?
Yeah, it was great.
I thought maybe it was supposed to be five, and then you just did four.
Regardless, it was a lot of games.
That sounds familiar.
It was hitting like 5:30, and we were like, all right, we gotta roll this.
Yeah, I think it was like, these games aren't even fun. Why are we still doing this?
Yeah, sometimes, you know. Yeah. But yeah, I definitely see like more like I think that's why I was so stoked when Steve wanted to make an Under the Dice Fest, because I was like, you know what? I think that's a great place for this for the event to live is inside of something bigger. You know, because we're going to bring the hobbyists out. And, like, for me, it was, like, this great discovery over the past year of this hobby.
Uh-huh.
And I know that the Nemo will be the gateway to that for a lot of other people. So the Under the Dice Fest, I think, will be a bigger thing. And Nemo will probably stay about 100 people. You know, 50 boards, I think, is a nice number because we can rely on the community for that.
I would still say it's the biggest Mordheim event in the world.
Oh, yeah, I believe so. I believe so. I actually didn't even tally up the official number of people because we didn't actually hit 100. 88. 88, wow.
We had six tables not filled. It was 88 players.
Beautiful.
Actually, 89. We had a last-minute entry who had car troubles on the way in, so we had 89.
Yeah, it was something.
It's quite good. Well, yeah, I like that being fast. Like it's kind of like a little convention.
Yeah.
And I think that is fun because it can encourage a wider group of people to come, even if you're not super excited to play Mordheim and just want to play whatever. I think that is fun because I think a lot of the people, we all have pretty similar shared interests. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I had a lot of thoughts about like what this could be and you know the dream, you know the dream of what we could see in this and it, you know, people submitting kind of like what we did to Adepticon where everyone, I want to run this game, I want to run this. It's all right, well, we'll fill your slot, and we'll coordinate it, and you get the people to bring the terrain, you get the people to bring their warbands, and everyone...
Oh, yeah.
Or whatever it is.
It sounds like a lot of fun, yeah, absolutely.
I don't know where we got to go from there, but I think, you know, we'll figure it out this year.
I like that idea.
Make a better Golden Demon.
Not, you know, based on last year, I don't know how hard it is.
Oh, yeah,
that's fair. Or, I mean, I wasn't there, but I heard...
I heard Sam Lenz won an award.
Oh, yeah, did he? He win an award if I'm there. If I'm a judge, that guy's winning.
If I'm judging, he's winning.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, well.
when I guess though I like that this is a slightly smaller scale event than like going. I mean, admittedly, I've not been to Adepticon, but
it's large.
Yeah, and this can maybe be what the Grimdark Hallway is, but then nothing else.
This is like the Grimdark Hallway at Adepticon.
Yeah,
maybe a little bit bigger, obviously, but
yeah,
that's like the. That's the feeling I get from it. You know, everyone's bringing crazy stuff. Everyone's so excited about it. It's the wildest stuff you've ever seen.
Right.
Grinding up models in a meat grinder.
Yep. Only a matter of time.
That's
a few
true.
More months.
Dissatisfied with how your Mordheim warband did, just get rid of it.
Just grind it up.
Unless they're the old metal models, then they probably wouldn't grind. Yeah.
They'll melt, though.
Yeah, they will melt.
Can melt them down into next year's trophies.
Yeah, oh, that's a good idea. Absolutely. I'm really excited for that, too. I can't wait to make some more metal ones of that. Oh, that
yeah,
Simso.
No, the trophies and stuff that you made are really cool. I mean, if anyone listened to the latest Hive Scum episode, you know that there were some trials and tribulations pertaining to that. But
yeah, a lot of learning going on.
They didn't even see the trophy.
It was worth
they weren't
it.
Even, they weren't even in the trophy.
Yeah. Oh, no, I know, right. They didn't make it. Yeah, the metal ones were so heavy. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, you guys saw it yesterday, right?
Yeah,
so it
yeah,
wasn't going to stand. Steve goes, we can't put it on the thing. You'll see. And I was like, yeah, wow, it would just take that thing right over. But we'll find a way to get them
what
out.
What were the were they at resin or what were
yeah,
the
those ultimate? Were resin, yeah.
Resin and FDM filament.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah. The Simsos I did with a two-part epoxy crystal clear resin because I wanted to get a mirror or like a crystal looking one, but they ended up being filled with bubbles and we couldn't
they
really
still
see
work.
Them.
They still work.
Yeah,
that made
so,
them
but
work.
Steve's like, I'm gonna paint them. I'm like, don't paint them. They're beautiful.
Oh my god.
But then when you saw what he did with them, they really came out great.
Yeah. No, they well, did. So the design was presumably supposed to be like the Baylet or the Egg of the King.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
We were thinking about what to do, and I said to Steve, I go, hey, let's get Simso to do a Baylet egg, and he's yeah. like, he goes, that's it. We're doing it. We're doing it. So Steve reached out to Tanner for us,
yeah.
and he delivered. You know, we asked for it in his style, and he did
yeah.
his thing.
Yep.
Yeah, I absolutely love it.
He crushed it.
Yeah, and then thank you guys very much for that pressure pop.
Oh, yeah, because I was going to say, like, the resin casting, did you just, like, pour, like, a silicone mold? Or?
I did. Well, originally I wanted to do everything in metal.
Yeah.
So I spoke to Cole, and he told me about that mold master
yeah,
dirty
yeah, yeah.
or whatever. So that's up to, that's good for a lot of heat.
Uh-huh.
So I was like, okay, I know I can pour pewter in this. So I started with that, and then I just started using it for resin after that.
Yeah, okay, yeah. okay.
Yeah, the same mold, though. So it's broken in really nicely now. You know, the separation, like the joint there, is pretty pronounced now, but on a metal model, I can clean that up on my grinder with no problem.
Okay,
you know?
Okay.
And then, but yeah, I'm excited to do a couple of resins. I'd like to see what it would look like with a nice, how I can, what I can do with that resin, as far as, like, imparting, like, colors and some kind of inclusions and things like that.
Listen, we're on a whole new journey.
Yeah,
new,
really.
New learning journey,
we
discovering
are.
New talents.
Because like a pressure pot helps a lot for resin.
That's what I heard.
Casting,
yeah, I talked
like,
to Curtis from Ramshackle
Games.
Oh, yeah,
Games, yeah, he's
and
great.
And he told me a lot of things. And then a friend here today gave me some really interesting things to start making some casts of. So looking forward to that.
Well, perhaps let's call this to a close for
I
now.
I don't know who this is, but he has a really great get-up right
some
now.
Some music is happening.
Yeah, this is unsheathed.
Nice.
I mean, it looks like he's playing a handmade, was that a lute?
It does look like
that.
That
is very cool. Okay, well, we'll sign F then.
Yeah. All right, thanks. Thanks.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you guys.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Dragged into Turbo Lasers. If you have any questions or suggestions, don't hesitate to contact us through Instagram or leave a comment on our YouTube channel or on our blog, betweenthebolterandme.com. We also stream on Twitch every week and would love to hear from you there as well. If you'd like to support us, please feel free to leave a review of our podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts, or subscribe to our channel on YouTube and Twitch.